This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we talk about the importance of diversity in your workplace, why you need to patch your iOS device immediately, and IBM's helping you encrypt everything. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast. The Canadian Tech Podcast is sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and developers of the apps used by some of Canada's biggest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you at oliodigitallabs.com. And we're also sponsored by CodeShip, continuous integration and delivery software that lets you ship your apps with confidence. Both CodeShip Basic and CodeShip Pro come with a free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Visit CodeShip.com today to find out which CodeShip product is right for you.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 125 for Sunday, July the 23rd, 2017, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs and CodeShip. My name is Stuart Clark.
My name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, we're back again another Sunday. Pretty warm and humid down here in southwestern Ontario. Another reason for me, I know you say don't say it. I love fall.
Well, hey, you're going to get some very fall-type weather tomorrow.
Hallelujah.
It's going to be... It's going to be dark and cold and a little bit of rain. So there you go. It'll be just like October.
Excellent. And I bet if I go to Costco, the Halloween stuff will be out.
I was there today. I didn't see any Christmas stuff, thank goodness. Or Halloween stuff.
All right. But they probably the back to school stuff.
Because we picked up a backpack and a lunch bag today for my oldest kid.
There you go.
And there have been snowsuits. They're fall ready for several weeks, which I've mentioned. Yes. But that's okay because I wanted one, and $60 is better than $120, so I'm not going to complain about that.
That's what I hear. I hear people can't believe it, but then the deal is apparently really good. Mm-hmm. Next week will be the Christmas stuff. Last week of July.
That's fine. I don't go there that often, and I know to expect it, so I can deal with it.
Well, that's all right. Well, tell you what. The next time I go, I'll do what I used to do to our admin assistant at our attraction. I'll take a nice picture and send it to you. Okay.
I was going to say something mean, but let's just move on we have a guest this week.
Yes. Why don't you welcome and introduce our guest?
I will. His name is Andres Aquino. Andres is an active advisor, community advocate, and startup investor in the Toronto tech community. He's also a managing partner at TWG. That's a Toronto-based software consultancy that builds software platforms and applications for enterprise companies, not-for-profit organizations, governments, and some of the fastest-growing startups in Canada. TWG also has teams in New York City and Mumbai. Welcome, Andres.
Thank you very much, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you on.
Okay, so we're going to start with our usual thing, which is our quick hits. Quick hits, see? I should have another beer. Quick hits. Take it away, Derek.
Apple released a security patch on Wednesday that you should absolutely apply because... almost certainly all of your iOS devices use Wi-Fi, unless you're weird. And so because iOS 10.3.3 addresses vulnerabilities with contacts, messages, notifications, Safari, and a bunch of other issues. One of the worst ones had to do with iPhone's Wi-Fi chipset and, I should note, other devices that use the same Broadcom Wi-Fi chipset, where an attacker could actually take over your device remotely if it was searching for a signal. It wasn't that difficult. Hackers are obviously always looking for vulnerabilities. Apple has the program, the vulnerability finding program, where you can actually...
The bounty,
there we go. The vulnerability bounty, where if you tell them you found an issue, they'll actually pay you for it, which is great. This is not just for iOS, but Android patched the similar issues several months ago. Apple's only getting around to it now. And just proof that you can never count your chickens before they hatch. Apple certainly touts their security prowess, and they have every right to do so, but nothing's perfect.
Exactly.
Netflix posted their quarterly financial results several days ago now. I think it was on Thursday. They added more than 5 million subscribers in the last quarter. They thought they were only going to add 3.2 million. Not huge profits, only 66 million on 2.79 billion US of revenue during the quarter. But it's still money in the bank. And their stock shot up more than 10% as a result to $178.55 US in after-hours trading, which of course is about $1 million Canadian. And they now have more subscribers outside the US than they do in, and total numbers now are over 100 million paying subscribers, giving them a run rate well over $1 billion a month, or wow. $12 billion a quarter or a year. Sorry, jeez.
Yeah, that's okay. When you get up to that big, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's $1 billion here, $1 billion there. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So they're definitely buying ice cream for the staff.
Yeah. So they did cancel some of their shows recently, but the international content is growing. And if you haven't seen it, 3%, a show from Brazil. Brazil is really good. Subtitles are pretty close to perfect. And they've got a new, relatively new show called Ingobernable. Did I say that right, Andres? Do you even know before I go stereotyping you?
I don't watch the Brazilian shows on Netflix, but I love that they kill projects quickly because they clearly have all the data points on who's watching and who's not. So there's no need to let shows run on if they're not being popular.
Yeah, The Get Down, I thought The Get Down was actually ended at a really good time. Two seasons was enough for me. They wrapped it up pretty nicely. If you guys haven't seen it, it's good. Sense8, I haven't finished season 2 yet, so I'm a little disappointed to see that get canceled. But again, if they've wrapped it up, I'll have, you know, some closure there. So
I think that's the secret, having the closure.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Then cancel it.
Yeah, Microsoft also announced earnings this week. Non-GAAP. Where's the GAAP? There we go. GAAP earnings per share, generally accepted accounting principles, which are really the only ones that matter, of 83 cents US, so about a buck Canadian per share for the last 3 months. Operating income was 7 billion non-GAAP. So, you know, reduce it, probably closer to 6 GAAP. Wall Street expected revenues of 24.3 billion US, which was pretty aggressive. But they did okay. And for the first time ever, they made more money on Office 365 than they did selling boxed or licensed, non-subscription versions of Microsoft Office. So that conversion to operating expense for companies and therefore recurring revenue for Microsoft seems to be going relatively well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Is this the official sign that we're living in the future now, where there's more 365 customers than boxed Microsoft Office? This could be it, the turning point.
I would say so.
I think it's just like every other platform we've seen, whether it's Steam or Netflix or that, we're moving away from physical to a subscription-based services.
I saw a tweet somewhere that Microsoft's been talking about their Azure results at every quarterly report for the last 3 years. So there's really no surprise that they want to highlight this.
Yes, okay. And they are definitely growing. And from what I've heard elsewhere, they are catching up to Microsoft. They still only do 20% of the revenue that Amazon does with AWS. But considering how late of a start Microsoft had with Azure, that's actually pretty impressive. Yeah, they're doing just fine. That's the Intelligent Cloud division. GAAP results, 7.4 billion US last quarter. That's 11% growth. Gross margin was 14.9 billion, a 64% gross margin, net income of 6.5 billion. So they're doing just fine.
Hey, they got the bucks coming in.
Yeah, they definitely got cash coming in.
If it starts telling the story that Amazon AWS is getting, then Microsoft will be happy with the way their stock will respond.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. The US FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, just like our Competition Bureau, I think it's called here. They're investigating charges that Amazon's pricing policy is misleading customers. That follows from a complaint by Consumer Watchdog Group, which examined 1,000 products being sold at a discount on their site in June. They found that Amazon's reference prices, which were found on roughly 46% of the products, meaning like, here's what it is elsewhere, here's what we're, and then they show you the Amazon price, which looks amazing. Those reference prices were actually 46% of them. Which were found on roughly 46% of the products were listed higher during the sale than in the 90 days leading up to it. So they put something on sale and then they're telling you that the normal price is more expensive than it actually is.
Yep.
That's not cool. So that dovetails an examination of Amazon's plan to purchase Whole Foods, of course, for 13.7 billion US. And Stuart, you made a note here that this follows on similar issues they had up here, and they got
we spoke about this in January. Yeah, they got fined a million. Very similar. Yeah, it was way back in January. I just happened to remember when I was doing a search for similar things. So yeah, so for once, our Competition Bureau was actually ahead of the Americans.
Cool, terrific,
exactly.
Good for them. Yeah. So Amazon, that's a slap on the wrist.
Sorry,
does that mean that maybe Whole Foods prices are going to go on sale, but they're actually going to get more expensive? Groceries at Whole Foods.
Grocery stores do this all the time, right? And obviously, this is not the tech part of it, but I see often, and I've heard elsewhere that Loblaws in general will increase the price of peanut butter. Right around the time the government issues their checks, which if it's true, you know, staples like that, like peanut butter, which can go a long way and have a lot of essential nutrients for people who have a low income, that's really shady. Like that's really taking advantage of people who have pretty much no other choice. So this is a similar tactic, right? Like, oh, here's our normal price. And then we're going to tell you it goes on sale, or now it's on sale, but the price we're telling you it normally is, we're actually going to mark that a little bit higher so that this looks like a ridiculous deal. Right, 63% off when really it's like 40%, which is still a sale, but a week ago, the normal price wasn't that much different than you're saying it is. You know, so if you go to Superstore or Metro even, and peanut butter is normally $4.99, and then all of a sudden, right around the 20th of the month, it's $5.99. Like every month, that's...
Yeah, I'll have to look at that. Because you know what, peanut butter is one thing in this house we love, and I use Flip to always try and find the cheapest one with price matching.
Right.
I'll have to double check that. I'm not sure about that. Maybe it's
I've heard and I've noticed that it definitely seems to fluctuate completely randomly.
Yeah, I know. And I think it's also the various manufacturers will give them deal. Because if you notice, you know, sometimes, let's say McCain cheese, they'll be on sale in all the stores for a particular week or whatever. Right. So,
which is obviously like a manufacturer thing, right? Like, hey, guys, we want to sell through some stock here. Anyway, so that's not tech related at all. But all right. Suffice to say, Amazon, cut it out.
Okay.
This should be something that more online commerce of groceries should support, actually, because you'll start to see, like using the grocery example, you'll start to see like more options for sourcing prices and comparing prices at the same time.
Yeah.
But can't say I'm terribly surprised to hear this, but we'll see.
Sounds like a good idea for a startup, just a company that tracks all the online prices and tells you when you should buy.
I think it's being, Flip kind of does that already.
Well, yeah, but they don't give you like price trends week over week, though. They could.
No, they could, I suppose. Yeah, could be something.
But I want the normal price, right? I want to see what the normal regular price week after week is.
Yep.
And if you do notice that Walmart and Superstore and Metro all up peanut butter and egg and cheese prices and milk prices. Well, milk never goes up unless like there's a significant change. But you know, all these other consumer staples right around the time Canada Child Benefit and employment income checks go out, that's a problem.
Yeah. It's something.
How is the peanut butter example different than when gas prices go up on long weekends or something for driving? Is it, you know, it feels a little darker than that, but.
Okay, well, I haven't, so that definitely used to be a thing. I don't notice it as often anymore, personally, whether there's increased competition or because companies like GasBuddy and tomorrowsgaspricetoday.com and stuff like that exist, I don't notice it as often anymore. And I pay a lot of attention, like, because I want to know, like, is it arbitrarily going up? It definitely used to when I was 17, 18, 19. These days, now that I'm in my 30s, I pay a lot more attention to it, and I don't notice it going up
as often. I don't think it is. There's a lot more transparency, and like people, I think a lot of people used to think, oh, these guys are just making an absolute fortune, but the margin isn't that big.
No.
And so I know places like when Costco comes in with a gas bar, you know, people, you know, the small ones, that's why you don't see very many independents yet anymore. They've all been pushed out because they were selling at a loss. So even the bigger change, like when Costco came into West London with their gas bar, you know, everything in the northwest quarter of London here, they had to compete with that. And I know at some points they were, you know, let's say your Shells, your Esso, they were losing money and they were hoping to make money by you going in and buying a coffee or a bag of chips or something. So, it's a lot more transparent. I don't think you see it as much anymore, but of course it's one of those things we're all just like, you know, just like the weather, we all love to complain. And you know, I always love when, what is it, Canadian Tire, they do their, you know, 4 cents off, and people will line up with their cars running for an hour to save $2, you know. So anyway, you have one more quick hits, I think.
I do, but before I do, I'm just gonna say the around here, it fluctuates across the country, but around here the average gas station, their margin on a liter of gas is around 7 cents.
Yeah,
it's not that high. Anyway, IBM announced the launch of the IBM Z, brand new system designed to encrypt large volumes of data and protect corporations from data breaches, because if you just encrypt everything, there's nothing to just steal and walk away with. They also opened a new IBM blockchain global data center in Toronto and other cities, including Dallas, London, Frankfurt, São Paulo, and Tokyo, which are all using IBM Z's encryption technology to secure and run blockchain services, because this is IBM's new thing, all about the blockchain and getting the banks onto the blockchain, and insurance companies, of course. To quote Marie Week, general manager of IBM Blockchain, "The powerful combination of IBM Z encryption and secure containers differentiates IBM blockchain services on the cloud by supporting the trust models new blockchain networks require. Enterprise clients also benefit from the ease of use, making management transparent to the application and the user." So really, if you want people to stop stealing your stuff, or you want to make sure the government can't snoop on your stuff, just got an IBM Z and encrypt everything in transit and at rest. And it'll be a lot more difficult for them to take any of it.
Well, I think it also shows the mainframes, you know, people always say, oh, the mainframe's dead, the mainframe's dead. Well, London Life, we still have them. And, you know, big corporations and that, when you need to just push through like large numbers, you know, the mainframes do it.
Yep. And that's it for the quick hits.
All right. And now we are going to pause for a moment for a wonderful message.
Olio Digital Labs is one of Canada's most accomplished small market agencies, delivering web apps and mobile apps to businesses across Canada. In an era of persistent connectivity and pervasive mobile devices, it has become more important than ever before for businesses to be everywhere their employees and customers are. That's why Olio provides its clients with the peace of mind only a highly skilled and experienced team can provide. A team that is big enough to support your needs, but flexible enough to work to your constraints. With a client list spanning from the Middlesex London Health Unit and Ellison Travel and Tours, all the way up to College Pro and the Home Depot, the team at Olio has proven itself to be the planners, designers, and builders of the web and mobile apps used by some of Canada's largest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you by calling 226-785-0420 or visit oleodigitallabs.com to learn more. That's Olio Digital Labs, code that powers every day.
And of course, we'd like to thank Olio Digital Labs for continuing to support the Canadian Tech Podcast.
All Alrighty, so now let's get on to our topics. And well, Andreas, we brought you here to the show because we want to talk about some things you've been up to of late. Let's first talk about this changetogether.io.
Yeah, absolutely. So changetogether.io is the website for a diversity initiative that we partnered with Tech Girls Canada on. Tech Girls Canada is kind of a hub in Toronto, and in particular in the tech industry, looking to we were part of their pilot project to help with what they're doing in terms of training for organizations. And it was about a year and a half in the end, and it was really a terrific program. So they're trying to help increase diversity at tech companies. And they came to TWG and helped us with a number of initiatives and programs that they put in. And we were effectively their guinea pig, and then open sourced all our findings and experiences in this beautiful, I don't know, 50-page document that they published afterwards, which you can download on the website.
Awesome. Yeah, because we've actually been talking about tech diversity and all the issues on the last couple of shows, and I know it's a challenge. So in your company alone, you've got a, you basically practice what you preach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we try to, at every step of the way. So much of what we do as a service organization is kind of be at the intersection of, startups and enterprises. And so we get to, you know, see the differences in cultures and, organizational, experiences. And even though we build product for these organizations, we also think that what we're doing is helping them by displaying kind of best practices at like a cultural level, process level, so we can help their organizations take a little bit more away from our working engagements.
Exactly. Derek?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something that I absolutely believe in, so I'm glad to see another company very similar to Olio taking it seriously. I'm going to download the guidebook because I definitely want to see what you guys have been up to. But like, what do you feel like has been, I guess, the biggest challenge? Like, what challenges do you guys need to actually overcome in order to ensure you're bringing in a diverse group of people?
Well, when we first started the Change Together program, it was almost 2 years ago now. So a lot has changed in that time. So the challenges we're facing now are very different than at the time. I'll tell the story of 2015, which was we were growing, and we've basically doubled the size of the company in the last 2 years. And we realized that we hadn't put a deliberate emphasis on hiring practices and making systems and processes more inclusive for all peoples. And in tech, for as most people know, especially in engineering cultures, most of the people in these companies are white, able-bodied men. Mm-hmm. And we realized that we needed to be more deliberate and conscious with our processes in order to create a different type of company. And it was, I guess the thing I want to say about it is that we were motivated and we wanted to contribute. We were scared. We were afraid of not knowing what to do, doing it wrong. I think the first thing we kind of got over was realizing that it was going to be a little bit uncomfortable, but if you can manage that, you're going to learn so much and change is going to actually occur a lot faster, than you think. So that was one of the things that Tech Girls Canada really helped with in sort of giving us this leg forward. And some of the strategies, if you don't mind me sharing a bit what's in the guidebook. But,
not at all. Go ahead.
You know, it was things like that seem very basic now, but removing names and other identity signifiers from job applications. And frankly, prioritizing interviews for applicants from underrepresented groups. So once you've gone through the resume process, And it wasn't just for hiring, but also for how we would grow and promote people from within. And one of the big asks and the big learnings was to actually formalize all the sort of skills required for each role or level in the job. So it was more transparent and clear on what gets somebody promoted. And if you understand that really clearly, then you can work more closely with your manager on those skills and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they may sound very basic, but you'd be surprised how many organizations, especially startups or, you know, smaller companies that are going through growth phases and don't have mature HR departments, don't focus on that.
Yeah, we were covering a story last week how there was a survey to a lot of large technology companies, and I was first, you know, asking about similar data. I was very surprised at the large numbers of companies that, you know, didn't have it or didn't supply the data. And I think a lot of it's what you say. I think a lot of people just don't know. They're either afraid or they don't know where to start. And I think, as you pointed out, the transparency aspect is something that, if you can do that, I think, in my opinion, you're solving half the battle.
It's a great start. And at the very end of this project, Sadia, the chair of Tech Girls Canada, who was running the project also with Steph, her partner in the business, they hosted an event at our studio where three very senior C-level white male executives from startups within the Toronto tech community got up and did this panel and really bared it all to talk about this, you know, uncomfortable topic, or seemingly uncomfortable. And they all were really honest and transparent, and they're clearly allies and motivated to help change in the community. But to that CBC article, which I read as well, I think organizations are still a little bit behind in, one, gathering this data, and then, two, feeling comfortable in putting it forward before they've solved the challenge for themselves.
And
that's what we wanted to do, to lead, you know, we wanted to lead by example and say, okay, we don't have this solved yet by any stretch, but we're going to put ourselves out there, see what happens, and hopefully that inspires other organizations to do the same.
Awesome. All right. Well, as I said, yeah, we're going to have a link up in the show notes to the report at changetogether.io.
I have one more question.
And Derek has one more question. Of course, Derek.
Well, I think it's an important one because,
go for it.
Like I said, yeah. I'm totally in on this, and you know, about increasing diversity, whether it's color, religion, gender as well. What I often hear from white heterosexual males is, well, but don't we just want to hire the best people? Well, yeah, of course, we don't want, you know, bad employees. But personally, I know that there's absolutely something to be said about having a diverse team with diverse experiences, because that helps bring a different perspective to any problem you're solving. But do you have any other answers for that type of pushback on ensuring diverse hires?
Well, I think the point around hiring the best versus hiring for diversity, I think anytime you're making that a binary thing of one or the other, you just clearly don't have any experience doing this, because, you know, when I joined TWG, we were 8 people. And, you know, when we got to about 15, that period between like a dozen and 15, or maybe a dozen to 20, we weren't imagining a 100-person company. We weren't even imagining a 30-person company. So the idea of going through a recruiting process that had job postings out and were recruiting in different areas just wasn't where our heads were at. Mm-hmm. And I feel a bit of regret that we didn't have a more of a conscious approach to it, because what ended up happening is we recruited people and hired people that were in our network. And I did not mine my network of female colleagues as much as male. And I think that's part of how these things end up becoming there. And so my point around your question is that you're only pulling from the pool that you're interviewing and viewing. And so if your hiring pool isn't diverse, then you can't actually answer that question of who's the best candidate.
Right.
And I would say to anybody that thinks that's a good argument is just start with a pool of candidates, and I think you'll realize that that argument is no good.
Fair enough.
Right. Okay, perfect. All right, we'll get into some of our topics here. One of our favorite government agencies, the CRTC, they've announced the new head, and he's going to be a former executive from companies like Telesat and Telus. It's going to be Ian Scott. So he's the formerly, he's worked on actually both private and in government before. He's got 25 years of experience in both the public and private side. He's actually filled positions at various points, including the Competition Bureau. We just talked about them. Mm-hmm. The CRTC, Telus and Telesat. At Telus, he had the position of Vice President of Government Relations, and he was also a registered lobbyist for the company. So basically, Michael Geist basically said, they're probably, this is the government, and quote, government's desire for less confrontation and drama. but he's always said, you know, 10 CRTC chairs seem to change quite often when they, once they become an independent commissioner, because sure. I know Francois Blaise was previously supposed to be rather quiet and, you know, seek compromise and stuff like that. And we've more or less seen the opposite from him
to the light of me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, which has been fine by me, because we have had Jean-Pierre Blaise led, as leader of the CRTC, a CRTC that has actually made a bunch of decisions that absolutely favor consumers instead of the private companies. And yet the private companies all seem to be doing just fine. Or the big ones, right? The Telus and Bell and Rogers and they're all doing just fine despite all of their complaints about proposed changes to wholesale pricing for last mile internet access for independents like Distributel and Start and Tech Savvy, and I'm sure some other ones out west that I'm not fully aware of, and ensuring that there are newer independent entrants into the wireless market. The only one really left over is now Freedom Mobile, which was Wind. And after they were granted an exemption for how much of their funding came from loans from Orascom. But it's been good. And so that's all I'm hoping for. I really hope Ian Scott turns out to be very Jean-Pierre Blaise-like, because it's been a good few years with him at the head.
Exactly. Andres, any comments about this?
The most important issue for me with anything related to the CRTC or the US and the FCC is net neutrality. Mm-hmm. I know that, CRTC covers many more things than just internet stuff, but for me, as long as I see that being championed, whether it's by a former telecom exec or somebody more independent, I think that's where things really need to be focused for the long-term future on the net.
Agreed.
But I can't say that I'm all that surprised by this either. The telecoms are the ones that do have, a lot of lobbyists and people that are in government relations. And so once you start collaborating in those circles, I'm sure there's a lot of positive relationships. And at least maybe the optimist in me thinks that way. Those are my main thoughts on it, to be honest.
Okay, excellent.
Well, not to be outdone, but we're also gaining a permanent appointment to Vice Chair of Broadcast, Carolyn Simard. She's coming from, she was legal counsel at the Department of Innovation, Science, and Economic Development, and that position has not had anyone permanent there since November 2015. And we're also getting Christiane Leisner as the interim vice chair for telecom, who is taking the spot of Peter Menzies. She was senior legal counsel with the CRTC. So, and I think most recently, Ian Scott has actually been at the CRTC for a little while now. So he's already been on the government side of things for a bit. But of course, there's certainly the potential for him to be very telecom friendly as opposed to consumer friendly. But let's hold out hope.
Exactly. That's all we can do. We'll have to see what happens. Okay, moving on. Google's radically going to change their homepage for the first time since 1996. Now, okay, here comes the old man bit. I remember when. One of the things people loved about Google is that it was just that plain homepage, nice and simple, no other lot of distractions. A lot of other companies decided, like Yahoo and AltaVista and things like that, decided to have these whole portals with lots of links, stories, and things like that. And AltaVista, I think.
Oh, man. And Excite.com?
Yeah, exactly. We don't see a lot of those now. Google's kind of going in this direction. Now, part of me says, in a lot of cases, okay, this may work in some cases, but in a lot of cases, I use a browser that I can just type in what I want to search for in the search bar. How often do I go to the homepage anymore? And I really wonder, you know, how often people are going there. Comment.
I see the homepage every time I load up a new tab. And what they've been doing in Chrome lately is underneath the search bar, they have trending stories.
Yeah.
Instead of the Google suggested ones, I see the ones from Pocket. Because I've got the Chrome extension for Pocket, getpocket.com installed.
Swan.
And, he knows all about that.
Yeah, he does. I know. I'm trying not to steal his thunder. but I see it multiple times a day, for sure. I don't pay a lot of attention to it. But I know I can search by voice there. So if I'm alone, I'll use that. I don't use it when in the office. And generally, I'll use that if I want to get to a bookmark because I don't have the bookmarks bar open all the time. So I still see it quite a bit. Not on purpose, though.
Will the I'm feeling lucky button still be there?
I hope so.
I'm confident it will. That's their shtick.
Exactly. But yeah, it's just, like I say, it's just funny. Obviously, they feel, you know, this is a strategy that is going to work for them. And again, I think for most people, as you say, that's the default. Like when I tab in my browser, I get the apps, or I use a plugin that has a nice, pretty picture and an inspirational quote. So, you know, again, you know, some people are never going to notice this and see it. So, yeah, this is going to start in the U.S. obviously first, and then eventually it will roll out in the next couple of weeks to all the international users. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. It's a fairly good history lesson in this Guardian article. I remember I Google, which was web portals of the day. Yeah, that was discontinued. That started in May 2005 and was discontinued in November 2013. But again, you had to be logged in and you had to select it.
Yeah. Well, you could set it as your home page, or your start page.
Right. Yeah.
This has got to be a response to people spending more time on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter, where you're getting feeds and trying to have a little more domain over the news bouncing around that people will do in their spare time.
I mean, like, I'm okay with this. This is fine.
It's fine.
I'm certainly not bothered by it. But can I just say how amazing it is that Excite.com seems to be frozen in time?
Are they still? Is it still
look,
a thing?
Look at the screenshot I posted in the Discord room.
Oh, I'm just gonna. Oh, I know. I just loaded it. Holy cow!
it looks like somebody built it on GeoCities.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Holy phenomenal.
Did you get?
And it's there.
Did you get that from the Wayback Machine?
No, that's now.
and you know what? The news feed is up to date.
And so is that
New
ad.
York Times. Yeah, it's loading a New York Times article from today.
Yes.
Squirrel attacks in Prospect Park lead to worries of rabies. New York
squirrels. That's
so
good.
Isn't that awesome?
It's not that surprising because there are people that still have AOL email addresses, okay? So like,
and still paying for AOL dial-up internet too.
Right, exactly.
Oh, this is because top theater tickets, home security, local home security systems, every state, even a few cities.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, like just top concert tickets.
This is like dmoz.org.
Yeah, something
wow.
like that.
Oh, no, yeah. So what okay. what I also find very funny is that Mindspark Interactive owns some of the longest standing but worst websites across the internet, including Cursor Mania, Smiley Central,
oh dear,
PopularScreensavers.com, Zwinky, and then somehow they own Vimeo. What the hell?
Well, you know, you have to have one decent beer with the crap,
of course,
in the fridge, I guess.
Right.
You know, right. You know, you have to have a microbrew with the Labatt's Blue or the Canadian.
Oh, look, another Under Armour ad. Stop following me around the web.
Alrighty.
You didn't hear the pre-show, so you won't get it. But I'm seeing a lot of Under Armour stuff lately. Okay, let's move
All
on.
Right.
Let's move on to Dazen.
They're a live sports streaming service.
Dazen?
Whatever. They're really popular.
I never heard of them.
No, but you know what? They're really popular because one of the big things, you know, I'm a cord cutter, but one of the big complaints a lot of people is when they cut the cord is if you're a sports fan of, you know, NFL football and stuff like that, it's very difficult to get your fix. Well, this service, they've obtained exclusive Canadian rights to NFL Game Pass, which includes access to all the live preseason, regular season, and postseason NFL games, as well as NFL Network programming. The service, which just launched, they're going to be pricing it at $20 per month with the first 30 days free, and they're going to do a full year for a special introductory price of $150. Now, right now, they've just announced NFL, but they also say they haven't gone into specific. You're going to be able to watch content from other top leagues and competitions. They're already available in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and Japan. People there can already watch Premier League and, Derek, you're probably going to shoot me if I say this wrong, La Liga soccer games.
Si, senor.
As well as ATP tennis matches, among other sporting events. Now, I've read some other stories, but it's obviously they don't have hockey. The NHL rights are pretty well locked up by Rogers until like 2021 or 22.
Yeah.
But again, for a lot of sports fans, especially if they, you know, they not only do football, but if they do the soccer, the rugby, I like cricket, you know, and it's going to be available to download on iOS, Android, smart TVs, and game consoles. This looks pretty good. Andreas, what do you think about this? Are you a sports guy?
Yeah, less than I used to be now that I'm a parent and running a business. But
that tends to happen, yes.
I do actually pay for the Sportsnet app. I'm a Raptors fan, and so I do pay for that. And even though they split games with TSN, ultimately, I think this is a good thing. More over-the-top programming in Canada will be welcomed by all sports fans and young people, especially, no doubt. But I have a feeling this stuff is going to be really fragmented. Like, you're going to have this thing on Dazen or whatever it is, this thing over here on Sportsnet. And so do you end up paying as much as you would for your cable package because you got $20 here, $20 there?
That's
for things?
The question.
I don't know, but you know, maybe you're an NFL fan and you're not an NFL, you can sort of pick and choose. So,
yeah, maybe.
Ultimately, I like it.
Yep.
My issue is that I would prefer if BN Sports, which already does a lot of this in Canada and the U.S., got these rights. So, BN Sports is huge worldwide. In Canada, they have the rights to MotoGP, Moto America, the Champions League, Real Madrid TV, La Liga. I know they have a lot of Portuguese soccer games as well. I'd like the rights for them here in Canada. And of course, they're $19.95 a month. So exactly what Andres was just saying, which is that, like, I'm not spending $20 a month for BN Sports and $20 a month for Dazen. I'd almost say no to Dazen just because I don't know how to pronounce it, but which is really annoying. But yeah, like that's an issue. And then of course, if I did have cable, well, then I'd be up a creek because then I'd be paying another $60 or $70 a month on top of all that for a bunch of channels I don't want. And then of course, there's a bunch of sports here I don't want. I don't want to watch professional darts. Like it's just
180. That's what they do a lot. They do a lot of the professional darts.
Yeah,
I know.
And the issue the main issue I'm having now with Dazen and even considering it is that there's no Roku app. I love my Roku. Right. I'm not buying an Apple TV. I think they are terrible devices. I don't feel like buying. I want an Xbox One. I don't want it just for this though, and I don't want to connect a whole computer to my TV either.
Yeah.
So what do? I think BN has a Roku app, but I could be wrong. So I don't know what to do. But I haven't bought any of these, and I'm still enjoying free Sportsnet or not Sportsnet NHL Game Center because my parents are still. Rogers subscribers. For anybody who's interested, BN Sports does have a Roku app. Sorry, go ahead, Andres.
Okay. Yeah, I can't help but think that all of the big sports leagues are just running experiments right now with these online providers on what's going to work for over-the-top stuff. Because, you know, if you try and project 5-10 years from now or however long it'll take, why will the NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL hockey, NBA, like, what do they need from other distributors? MLB has like one of the best apps on the internet right now. I think they won awards like a year ago or two. Mm-hmm. The NFL has got to have a monstrous digital team working on all their websites and apps and things like that. And so I think that they're going to emerge as the broadcasters ultimately on the internet, or if they don't, I don't know what I'm missing in other distributors would provide.
Right, exactly. So again, we're going to have to wait and see what happens. I'm sure this is something that people are going to use if they see a demand for it. But as you say, it's a matter of getting all the correct rights holders and for what people want. All right, moving on with our last story of the day, NanoPay. I remember we talked about NanoPay not that long ago, Derek. They apparently are getting strong scores from the U.S. Federal Reserve's Faster Payments Task Force. Imagine that on a business card.
Yeah, so ironically, 3 years ago, the U.S. Federal Reserve started a study on facilitating faster payments. 3 years later, the study's still going, I guess. NanoPay submitted a proposal which it received, quote, impressive scores from the Faster Payments Task Force report. They are one of... NanoPay says it is one of the 16 proposers that met and exceeded the task force's assessment criteria, and that assessment criteria included identifying target use cases for faster payments, developing a range of possible design options to address speed requirements, assessing each design option for its effectiveness, exploring high-level business requirements, and providing a work plan for potential paths forward. Anything's better than what they have down there right now, I can say that much. Mm-hmm. NanoPay's platform, in case you're not aware, aims to actually use cash, but at a lower cost of existing payment options. And they do B2B, P2P, B2P, and P2B. So basically any use case, person-to-person or business-to-business or any one of those combinations. And of course, right now, payments in the U.S. is pretty slow. They've got chip and sign, which seems ironic and useless when it should be chip and pin. I know they're moving towards chip and pin, but things are just really slow down there. But the score that the proposal received demonstrates that NanoPay's technology, which is based on the Canadian Mint originally developed Mint chip, which they bought about a year and a half ago now from the Royal Canadian Mint, that it provides secure, instant, low-cost, and data-rich payments, which I would say is all true because it's a lot like Venmo, which is a U.S.-based thing, or PayPal, but it's quicker. It does use cache, and there's also the option to use like a hardware token instead of your phone or instead of cache, obviously. So yeah, I mean, they're picking up steam. They've been pretty quiet, and I ran into them at the store conference in Scarborough, Mississauga, something like that, last year. And since then, they keep hitting the press with good things. So we'll see if they can continue to expand their footprint and give us a very cash-like alternative to payments.
Andreas, are you seeing a lot of companies or clients you're working with looking at more of these strong options?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I want to say is just shout out to the Toronto fintech community. There's so many great up and coming companies right now in Toronto that are in the fintech space, whether mm-hmm. it's payments like this or cryptocurrencies or Wealthsimple and Borrowwell and these great up and coming companies. So anything in this area that creates speed or consumer value using this kind of technology, I just love seeing. I don't know a lot about NanoPay specifically, but from what I'm reading, looks great. The thing in the space that I'm going to see so many different types of solutions. You're going to see a lot of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency mm-hmm. Momentum, and how will that overlap with more traditional like Visa or e-transfers or things like that. So you can see a lot of people using different ways to move money. And I think that's going to be really interesting. Really, really interesting.
Awesome. Okay. And now we're going to take one more little break with a word about the awesome people at CodeShip.
CodeShip is a SaaS-delivered continuous integration and delivery solution that lets you ship your apps with confidence. You can choose between CodeShip Basic or CodeShip Pro. CodeShip Basic is a simple testing and deployment service with pre-installed CI dependencies that works right out of the box, making the average setup time less than 3 minutes. Or you can give CodeShip Pro a try. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable continuous integration and delivery service with native Docker support, and it is a lot easier to use than Jenkins. It makes it easy to test and deploy your microservices and push to any registry, and it's also perfect if you want to deploy with Kubernetes, and comes with a convenient local command line tool that allows you to run your builds locally, helps encrypt your environment variables, and guarantees 100% parity between your development and production environments. Both CodeShip Basic and CodeShip Pro come with a free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. And of course, they love open source projects, so they are always free on CodeShip. So visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features to find out which CodeShip product is the best fit for you.
And we'd like to thank CodeShip for their ongoing support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. Okay, stuff we liked this week. I'm going to start. I've been kind of going back through some older games I played years and years ago on my iOS device. And this one here, it's called Pocket RPG. It's a basic dungeon crawl. They have a light version, or you can buy the full-on version. It's just fairly simple. Kind of reminds me of some other older dungeon crawls where you basically go through, you kill things, you get treasure, you can trade up.
Find the princess.
I don't know about finding a princess yet. I haven't found that one. But basics, very, very kind of, straightforward, not too complicated, which is what I like about it, actually. It's one of the big things I like about the game. So, yeah, it's available on iOS and Android. I believe right now at the App Store it's $6.99, but again, it's a good deal. I enjoy playing it. You've got lots of hours out of it. So that's mine. Derek, what do you got?
I've got this thing called the Remarkable Tablet. It was started by co-founders Magnus Wanberg and Matt Solberg. And basically what they wanted was a really good tablet for writing and drawing. So it's black and white. It's got a full e-paper display. I think they started off as a Kickstarter campaign. I can't quite remember. Mm-hmm. But the latency is only about 55 milliseconds, which is really good. Apple does have slightly lower latency on their latest devices, but regardless, that's impressive. And it looks really nice and it looks super simple. It's kind of like a big Amazon Kindle. It's got a very similar design, I would say, but you can write anything on it. You can do math, you can do drawing, and the whole reason was because the founders and the designer they couldn't find any other tablet, you know, software and hardware combination that really came close to paper. And even for me, growing up in this era, I still prefer writing on paper and even reading on paper. So it's really nice. It's not cheap. It's $479 US. But, you know, if it's something you feel really passionate about, you have an option. So I think it's really, really cool. If I get my hands on one, I'd be quite happy.
There you go. Okay, Andres, what have you got this week?
Well, Derek mentioned it earlier, but
he does that.
Sorry, it was definitely part of the conversation.
It was great.
But I really appreciate the fact that you're bringing it up.
Well, yeah. So I love Pocket. It's my favorite app on my phone, and I've been using it for years. It helps you aggregate and save articles, and you know, read or listen to them later. You know, got Chrome extensions and all sorts of things like that saved from Twitter. And when the app first came out, it was the best one on the market by far. And I remember just upgrading to their premium, which is, I think, like $5 a month or something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know what I was getting for the premium upgrade. I just wanted the company to stick around. And so I was like, right, I'm just going to consider this a donation. But it really is a great app. And I would recommend it to anybody. Lately, I've been really enjoying listening to like the text-to-speech on my way to and from work, so I can get in a couple more articles before changing diapers.
There you go. Now, it's you know what's funny? I only started using it myself about, really regularly about 2 years ago. Before that, I would throw everything into Evernote. But yeah, I just found that, you know, quite often I'd want to read the article. And then if it was something I really needed to reference, I'd send it to Evernote. So it was nice to be able to separate that. Yeah, I love the ease with the browser plugins. I have it on my iPhone. It's just, yeah, it's an awesome thing.
So Andres, you must be using it on Android.
I am not. I am using it on an Apple iPhone. I believe it is a number 7.
So if you text,
that piece of hardware.
So the text to speech works on iOS now too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago it was on Android first because Android gave the developer access to the right APIs and Apple didn't. So I didn't realize that they had that you could do that on iOS now. That's good to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
All right. Our next segment, what we're up to lately. Well, I'm still job hunting. If you hear of anything, I'll throw on my Twitter account a link to the resume and all that. But the Hire Stu hashtag still going. I've actually been doing some training on DaVinci Resolve, the video editing product. Lynda.com has a great series of lessons on it because I want to improve my video editing skills for some other projects I'm working on. So basically that, and the honey-do list has strangely increased slightly since I've been home. Can't imagine why.
Yeah.
So we're kind of plowing through some unpacking and purging and things like that. So that's what's been happening with me. Well, Counselor Silva, how about you?
No council meetings recently, but there is talk about putting up some security cameras at the park down the street from me because these darn kids just seem to think it's really cool to wreck the washrooms and that sort of thing. So
tiger pits, man, tiger pits. I keep telling you.
I'm gonna make sure we raise property taxes 100% next year. We're gonna build a coliseum, and that'll keep these kids busy. Whether they're watching or fighting, they're gonna be
doing
something. I will too. I'll get a season pass. So there's that. Otherwise, I haven't had a council meeting in a couple weeks now. We will have our next one on August 2nd, I believe. And then back to normal schedule in September. Busy at Olio initiating some new marketing initiatives. There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff there. Obviously, we have the new ad playing on the podcast. Hopefully, people like that. And you'll be hearing us elsewhere. Other podcasts, not so much online ads, but certainly other places. And hopefully from other people. I added some new managed VPS plans without cPanel pre-installed over at CleverHost, so that brings the cost down by $20 a month. So if you were thinking $50 is pretty expensive, fair enough. If you don't need cPanel, now you can go without it, and you can also just go ahead and get any of the other operating systems and applications available. So Windows is available, Ubuntu, Debian, CentOS, CoreOS. I said Windows, 2012 and 2016. And then like pre-installed apps, you can do Webmin or a LEMP stack as opposed to LAMP. Or you can get Nextcloud or OwnCloud or WordPress, a bunch of other stuff, all pre-installed, ready to rock. Otherwise, I've just been enjoying my new pool, family time. Oh, and there will be more marketing initiatives from CleverHost, including Big Pimpin', the affiliate program.
Excuse me? Big what?
Big Pimpin'.
Big Pimpin', okay. That's without
the
said.
Without the escort part of it. Just pimping, okay. Pimping out my business just, instead.
Just checking. I thought we'd have to change the rating again.
Big Pimpin' on BLADs.
Oh, dear. I could just, you know, I'm just thinking of your Twitter avatar right now, and it just, yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect. I just need a hat. I just need a pimp hat. And,
you just need the pimp hat, and you're all set.
And like a purple suit.
Just remember, you got to ask your partner's permission first.
To buy a purple suit? No.
No, I get a purple suit. To wear it out of the house.
Oh, no, no. She usually leaves before I do. I can leave the house any way I want. It's when I come home that I'll hear about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, Andres, what have you been?
Well, I love that you guys do this section. This is great. So what have I been doing? Well, two things this last week that were kind of interesting. I'm helping advise an organization called Code for Canada, which is similar to the vein of Code for America.
I get those emails.
good.
Yeah, that's my counselor email address.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to help government bodies by creating this fellowship program, which mm-hmm. embeds teams of like technical engineers or designers or data skilled people into government departments to help work with whatever that body is doing, with the hope that that'll help transformation from within these organizations, which I think is really critical for government to be able to keep pace with technology and all the digital services that are available to us as consumers. So that's neat. And another one that happened this week that I'm proud of is that our company released a code of conduct at work. And I thought we had one already, but it wasn't published in our wiki. But anyway, it was off of the back of sort of the articles in the New York Times around full sort of team hands, all hands meeting about how everybody felt about it. And what came out of it was that we would create and publish a code of conduct that not only people within the team would adhere to, but we would also publish it on our website and at all the events that we host. So we know that clients and visitors to our space would also be following that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very good.
Kind of like, the parental code of conduct when you register your kid for hockey.
I'm not there yet, but I bet it is.
Yeah. Well, there is one,
right? Don't they have one for soccer too?
They did in Strathroy. They don't in Delco Bridge. They should in Delco Bridge. I can tell you that.
Are you saying some of the parents are a bit excitable?
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. 3 weeks left.
All right. Well, Andres, we really appreciate you joining us tonight. You're welcome back any time. It's been really good to hear another perspective, especially from the Toronto scene.
Thank you. It's been a great time being here with you guys.
Good stuff.
Okay. So as normal, don't forget to review us on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Player FM, wherever else you get your podcasts. Retweet us when we tweet about new episodes. Share them on Facebook, like our page on Facebook, or even go old school and tell a friend. You can also send us an email at contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. We love hearing feedback. So that's about it for this week. So for episode 125 for Sunday, July the 23rd, 2017, my name is Stuart Clark.
My name is Derek, hashtag change together, Silva.
And I'm Andres Aquino.
Thank you and be well.